Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Cynthia Littleton, co-editor-in-chief of Variety. Today, my guest is Sam Wick, head of UTA Ventures. One of Wick's jobs at the talent agency is to help build businesses and business opportunities for UTA's many clients. The era of a star holding up a Coke can and smiling for a check is pretty much over. Nowadays, brands are looking to align with boldface names that give them what Wick calls brand permission to reach their target consumers. Wick has seen the evolution of digital media from the front row, having come up as an executive at mp3.com, MySpace, and Maker Studios before he joined UTA in 2016. Putting on his venture capitalist hat, Wick also offers some insights on fast-growing sectors that are destined to intersect with entertainment. That's all coming up on today's episode of Strictly Business. Welcome back to Strictly Business.
Sam Wick, head of UTA Ventures. Thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Tell me, Sam, you know, as the head of a ventures group for one of the Hollywood's largest talent agencies, you have quite a perch into the industry. And it's an industry that has is really been in the last, 2 years has been in quite a run of attracting a ton of attention from private equity. Seemingly everybody that ever held an executive position is about to launch a SPAC to go buy things. There's a lot of activity in the marketplace right now. From your perch, what do you see that is, particularly of interest to private equity investors? What sectors of entertainment, media, and telecom are they most interested in right now?
Right. So if we even kind of step back and just talk a little bit about how we think about kind of talent and how they act as accelerants, for a business. So, agencies traditionally were focused solely on media, but as they've evolved and added additional divisions, sports, speakers, fine arts, right? Digital, the breadth of what we actually touch is much, much broader than just media. So the way that I fundamentally think about it is, where do our clients have brand permission? Where does their audience feel a sense of attachment to their missions or their goals? And that includes media. Media is definitely a large focus area there, but it also includes consumer products. It also includes experiential businesses like hospitality or restaurants, and it includes pro-social, right? One of the things that talent are great at are simplifying complex situations or borrowing, brands can borrow their brand equity to help them kind of understand things. So you see that a lot in like climate change or even a category like finance, but mm-hmm. Go back to
social justice, any number of social justice issues absolutely get magnified.
Yes. But to go back to your question in terms of where are people looking, right? What are they thinking about, right? And so I'll hone down on a couple themes that I've been thinking about specifically related to media. And then maybe a little bit later, we can talk about the thesis that actually gets us to these categories. But on one end, you've got this movement towards media companies focusing on direct-to-consumer businesses. And if you think about companies like Disney and Discovery, historically, they were more B2B to C companies. They created great content, right? And they went to someone like Comcast, who did all the marketing, the customer acquisition, the LTV to CAC analysis, the churn analysis. All of a sudden, they're getting good at this, right? And Disney's getting really good at this, right? So then if you start thinking about where the growth is for these kinds of businesses, right? And Disney now has 3 direct-to-consumer services in ESPN, Hulu, and Disney Plus. It's pretty logical that you could think about, well, they now understand that funnel. They understand how to market. What are the other things that could fit with their brand identity? So for example, we're an investor in a company called Masterclass, which is an incredible, business, right? You could see a company like that really fitting in quite nicely with Disney or frankly Discovery, right? But you could also see those same types of companies, not just focusing on video assets, but any asset that has a subscription method, right? So think about a music service or a wellness service. Could a company like Calm or Headspace be bundled together with some of the offerings that some of these media companies have? So anything kind of in this larger subscription area, I think is really quite interesting for us.
It's the world of the new bundle. People are bundling. And yeah, in the old days, it was MTV and CNN and Nickelodeon and Lifetime. And now it could be, like you said, any number of channels plus a wellness app or a Zen meditation. You're right. That unbundling and rebundling is what I think why everything feels so kind of frenzied right now in the business, because there's all this opportunity, but there's also like, woo, what's going on? So yeah, as you say.
Okay. So I want to give you another theme, which is, and this is like this has been going on forever, right? Which is, if you find places where people are spending more time than where dollars are spent, there's going to be growth, right? So if we think about this, you know, where I initially built my career, which was in digital media, perfect example, right? For many, many years, there was more time spent than dollars spent. And everyone kept saying, well, advertising dollars are eventually going to shift. Where is that happening today? Audio, right? So oftentimes we say podcasting, but it's not just podcasting. Clearly, there's incredible growth in podcasting. We see a lot of the same dynamics happening with creators, the creator economy in podcasts. Like, we have a client, My Favorite Murder, has an incredible kind of connection and reach, same way that digital talent, do today. But it's broader than just podcasting, right? And it's not just content, it's the entire infrastructure layer. We have an investment in a platform company called Art19 that does distribution and monetization, but it's also connected devices. So if you think about what's happening with Alexa or Google, right? That's a separate ecosystem, more time spent than dollars spent, right? And then you could also look at, areas like converting print to audio. And there's been a lot of investment there, making content kind of easier to consume, on the go, right? So that is also a general theme for us, right?
I'm thinking, like, even within those industries, there's so much tech innovation that needs to make. We've been so spoiled. We're so spoiled by these great interfaces. But every click is somebody pouring over to make it that easy. And a lot of investors have told me, like, it's not as sexy, but ad tech and connectivity tech is just amazing, like, moving ahead at warp speed innovations going on there. I'm sure you're seeing.
It is a truism that it is oftentimes not just the vision, but the execution.
Sure, the details.
So it is the little things, right, that maybe we don't think about. They're not as flashy, right, for people, but that really make a difference. And so when you look at, and we have a lot of businesses and consumer products, we spend a lot of time thinking about what is the acquisition funnel? What is the drip marketing strategy across, email and text and what is the proper churn rate and inventory allocations and 3PL? Like, these are things that are not particularly high flying and sexy, but they are typically a hallmark for, what moves a business from being just good, to great. And so, going back to the audio theme, why is Clubhouse winning in the audio category, right? Because there's going to be a ton of competitors, but why are they winning, right? And it's oftentimes that attention to detail, the network effects that really, at the end of the day, make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. The ease of use. So with the direct-to-subscription boom at the biggest of the big companies, how are you seeing that filter out to opportunities to investors in other areas?
We both invest and we build businesses with our clients. And when we build, what we found is that over time, the market is evolving and it's in a sense upstreaming. So it used to be that the talent would just start something from scratch, raise capital, build the brand. Increasingly, we're seeing this interest in, and this is when we work with private equity quite a bit or with corporations, spinning out new divisions, potentially buying a company and using and working with talent to inject their brand story and authenticity and accelerate the brand. Or even taking a brand, like a lot of the large public companies have brands that are just kind of operating at a steady state level, right? And the gross margin's the same, the profitability is the same, the marketing expense is the same. They're not gonna double down on marketing, but they feel like if talent could come in who really fit with that brand and help them move the needle via earned media, right? They're willing to compensate the talent in exchange for that. And so you do see that happen a lot, you know, on the talent, you know, side. Again, I think more frequently in both consumer media, but also quite often in consumer products, you know, as well.
Mm-hmm. And are you seeing, I would imagine that you're seeing, you know, we're talent getting some form of equity, whether it's, you know, equity or a small slice of equity. But I mean, that seems to be a growing area. I would imagine, you know, a growing area of focus for the, you know, for the many, you know, top tier folks that you guys represent.
Yeah, there's a couple of themes, right? Because, you know, there's always been a very robust endorsement business for a lot of talent. But what we're increasingly seeing is that the talent are interested both because of the potential financial returns, but also I think the legacy aspect of it in building, you know, big and meaningful, you know, businesses. And there are macro factors driving this. You know, one, if you look at and you look at studies around younger consumers, they are increasingly looking for brands that have a founder-led story and they understand the mission around. And talent are highly effective at this. You also hear the same thing from retailers. So Target has done especially well at this over the past few years in bringing in founder-led brands. And I think the other factor, and this really touches in with media, is that it's harder and harder to tell your brand story through traditional media, right? There's less advertising space. And so, and if you look at the platforms that are growing, let's look at the social networks, pick any of them, right? Facebook, Instagram, Snap, the actual content that people are consuming is generally the social content that you and I or a celebrity or an influencer is creating. And so they're actually controlling that marketing message in a way that's much more powerful. And I think the brands are increasingly recognizing that they are in an effective manner kind of breaking through, you know, breaking through the noise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You must have seen, you know, I mean, you must be watching with interest the growth of TikTok and TikTok as a marketing platform is, you know, the fact that feels almost baked into its DNA. It seems like, you know, there's so much opportunity there.
Certainly. I think one thing that's interesting is before TikTok, you may have to go back 10 years to find the last breakthrough social media product, which is probably Instagram. Right? So it's been a while. So it's hard to get those network effects. And each of these platforms has a different kind of influencer or creator and typically a different kind of product or kind of product opportunity comes out of it. So what's interesting about TikTok specifically is one, the growth of food. Like food has always been a category that we've always felt that talent could push on. It's always been historically been a category that's not been as attractive because the margins have been somewhat thin mm-hmm. at the retail level.
You got to sell a lot of boxed macaroni and cheese to make it worth your while. Yeah.
Right. But you're seeing a lot of creators do very interesting things. So for example, we represent Half-Baked Harvest, right? Who is one of the YouTube and TikTok. Joshua Weissman, who is a fast growing kind of young, hip, you know, celebrity chef. And so each of these platforms does create their own set of stars and influencers, which then leads to a series of businesses that they can build.
When you go out in the business building part of your job, when you go out to look to raise money for people, do you have the usual suspects? Do you have the usual 10 firms that come in? To my mind, every time I turn around, there's a new something, something capital, new, you know, Ventures Inc. It feels like there's just like a lot of new faces coming into the, you know, and new interest in the industry. Are you seeing that?
Right. Well, first I should start by saying it's not just me. I have an amazing team. And I will also say that I think, you know, pound for pound, it's the best, you know, team possible. And it is largely a team composed of female executives. And that I have a sense that's why we're overperforming.
Well, you want to get something done, right?
But you know, what's interesting is, I think as we've discussed, I come from a background of having raised venture capital for my own companies, building them and selling them. And that was the model that I truly understood coming into UTA. What I've learned is that, you know, being in client services, we can't really have one size fits all. That not every business, not every talent is meant to go through the venture process. And so in developing our group, we developed, in essence, a financial coverage model. And we work with family offices, all stages of venture, private equity, and also corporations. And the models have a wide variety in terms of how they're capitalized. So there are businesses that we've gone out and we've raised venture capital for. So for example, we have a business with Issa Rae called Sienna Naturals, which is a natural hair care company. It's run by a woman named Hannah Jope, who's fantastic. That company is venture-backed, largely venture-backed. But there are other businesses where we've structured them as joint ventures with corporations or brand incubators. An example of that would be, we have a business called Anomaly with Priyanka Chopra Jonas and Mesa. Mesa is a beauty brand incubator, and they're backed by Bain, which is a private equity company. And they have different, I'm not saying one's better than the other, right? It's really about what are the ultimate goals and objectives, you know, of our clients. But there are a wide variety of models. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's, there's no usual subsets, you know, usual suspects model, although there are certain marketplaces. So if you're going to build a beauty brand, you know that there are a certain number of very strong brand incubators that you're going to work with. And if you're going to do it on your own, there are a certain number of venture funds who are top tier funds who really excel, right, at investing if you want to go down that path. But what's really interesting to me, and particularly kind of given now the sizing, is that the range of models that we've been able to kind of work through. And I will it's changing in real time.
What are you finding in terms of particularly younger talent that comes to you? Are you finding, is there a real sense of like digital entrepreneurship out there? Do talented people come in your doors with the idea of, yeah, I can build a company? You know, it feels to me like there is a breed of, you know, 20 something that has a podcasting company in their head and working on other audio projects on the side. I'm amazed at how many plates people can juggle.
Right. So we call them the multi-hyphenates.
Yeah.
Right? Because they can do so many different things. And so there is one, just starting with the question on digital platforms. I think many of the creators who are building businesses on digital platforms, they're breaking down that wall, that barrier. Right. I used to always say this, and I mentioned I was on the management team of Maker Studios and YouTube Network, and what I saw there was when you were speaking directly to your audience, they really understood who you were, and you had a greater ability to influence purchase behavior. And so I think a lot of the digital creators are really savvy and really understand this. And so if you look at someone, for example, like Emma Chamberlain, who's one of the biggest digital stars, period, full stop. Mm-hmm. We worked with her and we've built a coffee company with her called Chamberlain Coffee, which is doing incredibly well. But it's because I think the audience understands from day one, right, her love of coffee in that category. And that's happening across the board. You could look at our clients, the D'Amelios, who are on TikTok. You could look at a number of the beauty influencers, right? They've almost baked in commerce as part of their DNA. The content itself, right, is, you know, instructional, is educational, right? In a way that it wasn't, you know, for a previous generation who was on film and TV.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a very different toolkit.
We'll be back with more from Sam Wick after a quick break. And we're back with UTA's Sam Wick.
Sam, tell us about your own journey through digital startups and entrepreneurship. How did you get on the path that led you to UTA?
One of my colleagues likes to say it's the long and winding road, how I got to UTA. I've always been interested in media and tech. I actually started my career doing A&R for American Recordings. I worked for a guy named Rick Rubin, who anyone
I've heard of him.
Yeah, anyone who loves hip hop loves very well. I actually signed a group called System of a Down, and that was my whole first career. And I loved music then, and I love music now. And one of the things that I often say is, no matter what job I choose, it always seems that that company chooses to be in music. From there, I moved into media and tech, and I did a series of companies. I ran content for mp3.com, which we took public in the early aughts. I then did a SaaS company with Mike Jones, who runs a very well thought of incubator here in Los Angeles called Science, called UserPlane, that we sold to AOL. I ran marketing and content for MySpace, if you remember that. And then I was on the management team of Maker Studios, and it was, you know, which we sold to Disney.
That in and of itself must have been quite a journey.
I gotta tell you, Disney is a really amazing company. It is, like, you know, the way they tell stories, and not just, you know, on a screen or on a box, but thinking about the brand, the entire brand life cycle of storytelling is incredibly powerful. And being from, I grew up in Southern California. I used to go to Disneyland every year for my birthday. And so there were days that I would pinch myself as I was sitting there on the corner of Dobie Drive and Mickey Ave, or maybe it's Mickey Drive and Dobie Ave. I can't remember. But, you know, it was truly a great place, you know, to be. And you're actually seeing a number of those Disney executives, as disruption occurs, doing things that are very innovative, right? So, you know, Ben Sherwood, who ran Disney Media Networks, has a new coaching and sports startup called Mojo, which we're an investor in. And, you know, Kevin Mayer is obviously doing some things that are quite, you know, intriguing as well. So I actually did quite enjoy my time there. But what I learned both from Maker and from Disney was that I felt that this trend of creators being able to build businesses and all the things that we've just talked about earlier today was only going to accelerate. And that's what really attracted me to UTA. I started thinking about, well, if there's a platform for digital creators, there's probably a bigger platform for all creators, all talent, all thought leaders, all speakers. And what could be the most exciting place to do that? Well, UTA.
You know, what surprises me is just kind of the amount of ambition, which, of course, you know, people that make it in Hollywood are never short of ambition. But I think just the sense of, like, business literacy, the idea that, oh, I can create a company. I can create a company that will then, you know, kick off returns that can help my effort to provide clean water in, you know, in another country. I mean, the connectivity that as you talk about, the power that talent can wield to accelerate things, to bring, you know, to bring things to market now. Do you ever, I would imagine that there must be times when you have, and again, not asking for specifics, but there must be times when people want to bring you ideas that you think this isn't going to fly, or there's not going to be the market support for that. Do you ever have to have tough conversations with people sometimes about, you know, what realistically is a business and maybe what is more like a hobby?
It's normally the first conversation that I have. And what I found is that my colleagues and, you know, our clients really respect that, right? What I tell them is that what is, you know, my goal here is to build equity value, right? The mission statement of my group is to build equity value for the agency and our clients. And we do all of this market coverage. We have all of this information. We you know, all of the things that are happening with trends. And we will tell you what we think is, you know, when you're rowing downstream and when you're rowing upstream. And then after we have that conversation, what I will say is, but I will help you however I can. I will support you however I can. I want you to be informed on what's happening within the market so that you can make informed choices.
Sam, I so appreciate you taking the time to talk us through and kind of give us your thoughts about this marketplace. Things are changing so fast. The companies are reorganizing. The, you know, business models are changing. Streaming services are launching every month. why don't you wrap it up with a couple of like sort of top line trends that you think that are on the horizon for the rest of this year?
Okay. So I was thinking both about COVID trends and post-COVID trends. And so during COVID, there's been a number of areas that have accelerated. We talked about a few earlier on, but I'm going to add fitness as a big category. And I think that media companies should really be thinking about it as a content category, right? So if you think about a business, we're an investor in a company called Echelon, which is a mass market connected fitness company. We have bikes and rowing machines. And we think about the amount of time that those consumers spend in front of a screen.
Those mirrors are, you know, are another distribution channel.
That's correct, right? And also think about the network effects around fitness. So particularly think about a company like Strava, right? With literally, you know, over 1 million subscribers. Wellness and mental health is a category that continues to accelerate. I think a number of people are having what I refer to as pre-TSD, where they thought 2019 was great and 2020 sucked. And now that they're thinking about being out five nights a week, right? I have this saying, you know, I can't wait to go to parties so I can remind myself how much I hate going to parties. And so I think, you know, I'm being a little cheeky about it, but I think there's going to be real kind of stress, you know, around that. And that's going to be a big category.
Yeah.
Food delivery and the shifting of how we consume food has been a big growth, you know, category for us, right? And then I think as an investor, what we have to think about is within all of these categories that we talked about, what is the pull forward versus the systemic change? So a lot of content companies in Q2 and into Q3 saw big bumps because people are at home and they were looking for content to consume. Right? Is that a systemic change or did it pull forward and then it came back? Right?
Right.
I also think I think there will be a great desire for people to connect. And I'm very confident that I think live in many facets will come back quite quickly, but I think it'll be generational, right? So if I was a live, you know, if I was betting on the live music category, right, or investing there, I'd be thinking about probably leaning younger. Like then when I talk to my friends who run sponsorship for the Philharmonic, that might be a little bit slower, right?
Right.
In terms of, you know, coming back. So those are some of the areas. And then we could talk about, you know, crypto, sports betting, creator tools, fan engagement. All of those are also kind of big growth areas, but areas that we were focused on before COVID and continue to focus on today.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. We love to hear from listeners. And be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.